Hey, football fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win up to $250,000 in bonus bets. It's all part of BetMGM's longest touchdown jackpot, where you'll be able to split the grand prize with anyone else who bet on the longest touchdown of the week. Log into your BetMGM account today and opt into the promo. Then, place an anytime touchdown wager of $10 or more on the player of your choice up to one player per game. If your player scores the longest touchdown of the week, you'll win a share of the $250,000. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. For Arizona, 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are unrestricted bonus dollars that expire in 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're back for part two of the discussion of the offense against the Bills. In some ways, a good thing to talk about because, hey, the offense was fairly effective. The defense, honestly, fairly effective, too. We come back to how the hell do we lose this game, here to try and help us work through the catharsis that we're having here is Nick Mehta. Nick, how you doing?
Doing great, Ken. You know, wish it would be a better occasion for us to be talking, but always glad to be here with you.
All right. Outstanding. So let's start off the second part of the show with some offensive line. I just want to give a short synopsis up front. It was probably a slightly above average game for the offensive line in total. They provided Lamar with a pretty good overall opportunity set, which we'll get to. We actually got to in the first show. It's something to go back and listen to if you haven't. But Lamar still beat his opportunity set by 70 yards, 2.6 yards per throw, which I don't think I ever got to mentioning there. Kind of a meh run blocking game. The Ravens had big advantages that the Bills, I think, were better at using in terms of using double teams to really push around the Ravens' defensive line in a way they do not often get pushed around. But the Ravens ultimately ran more effectively in this game, and obviously they were doing something right as well. And the biggest thing also, Lamar ran the offensive line out of two pressures in this one. So we'll get to some individual stuff.
Yeah, I think I think overall the offensive line, you know, the development over the years has been very clear for players like Filili and Rosengarten. And then, you know, it's also just another situation where this is an offense with Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry, and so much of what they're able to do is able to cover up deficiencies in the offensive line. You know, I think maybe my favorite offense, or the best offensive line for the Ravens of this game, I felt like was Ronnie Stanley in, you know, what could be his last game as a Raven. So if it was good to see him go out on a high note.
Yeah, absolutely. Ronnie made 50 of 54 blocks in this one, missed two, half a penetration, half a pressure. That is a hell of a game. Now, it's interesting because there were 56 plays in this game. I don't know why Ronnie left the field for a play, but I can tell you the order of what happened. He was a tackle eligible in an unbalanced formation, very unusual, and ran a pattern. And it was, let me see, I wonder which play it was. Yeah, so it was second and three that became first and eight after they got the Bateman pass to get him to the 2 yard line. They didn't end up scoring. But on the second and three play, he actually ran out in the pattern. Lamar was sacked for minus five on a play that was an ample time and space throw. So it's a Lamar sack on that play. And then the next play, he wasn't out there. And I'm not really sure why, but Jones replaced him and then Stanley returned for the next series. So kind of an interesting circumstance there for Stanley. But I've got a little more about the metrics and then we move on here. 48 points, 0.89 per play with an adjustment that gets him up to a 0.91, but he would have had an A either way. Not a whole lot in terms of special blocks, two in level two, one pancake, one highlight. And Lamar ran him personally out of one pressure. I kind of feel like that's been the Ronnie Stanley story for his career here. Not in a bad way either, because he gives up ground to keep his mirror. Lamar works very well with that. And in this case, like many times before, Lamar ran him out of a pressure after getting crowded out of the pocket.
Yeah, I think one thing about Stanley this year is that some of the bigger matchups that he's had, he has just not been as good against Trey Hendrickson and Myles Garrett. Didn't have to deal with an elite edge rusher in this game. I don't remember exactly how the Bills rotating around, but still Von Miller still. Yeah, a lot of Rousseau on the left side primarily, Miller on the right. And so I felt like he did a very good job. It was kind of another consistent game in what he's put together all season, where he's no longer the elite, I'm going to shut out every single edge rusher I face, no matter who, kind of left tackle. Again, a very solid game. He does what he needs to do. One spot in from him, Patrick McCary, a guy who, you know, has played left guard for the first time in his career this year and managed to hold down the starting spot all there, all this year. How did you think he did?
Improved greatly throughout the season. Did okay in this one. It didn't have the hardest drill. He had some of Daquan Jones and he had some of Ed Oliver being in that spot. And they used three down linemen on a fair number of plays. Like when the Ravens, a lot of 12, 21 or 22, they had three down linemen on the field. Then he was up on against single teams on a lot of those, but made 47 out of 56 blocks, missed five, half a penetrations. That's a loss on a run play. 1.5 pressures, didn't have any penalties, by the way. Those penalties, they've gone away the second half of the season for McCary. So that's been a real welcome change. It was a lot of his deductions early in the season. Got a 0.77 raw score with adjustment. That's 0.80, which is still in the C range. Five level two blocks, two pancakes, 5 out of 9 on pulls. That's not so great. And it's 5 points out of 9. He did have a pull that led to a half penetration that was baked in there. So not so great there, honestly. And two highlight plays. You know, very solid player. The Ravens have gotten tremendous value out of McCary this season. I guess one of the real questions is, are they going to be able to re-sign him?
Yeah, and you know how I'd love to get bogged into the contract details on that. I'll save that for another time. What I'll say about McCary is that having a sixth offensive lineman who can fill in any of the five positions and start not just in a pinch, but ultimately the whole season at a position he's never started before, is worth, I think, more money than people think in this market. I think we've seen what a lot of teams are doing with six offensive linemen across the league, the Lions, the Bills, and that's becoming a more and more valuable asset to have.
Let me keep it here for one more second, because Andrew Voorhees did play well against, let's see, I want to make sure I get to the correct place, against Houston in week 17 and scored a 0.82. I think that game alone will help him in his chance to be the starter next year at left guard. And I think, honestly, the Ravens have three out of their four offensive tackles are leaving next year. Rosengarten's the only one they're keeping. So they've got to decide who they can bring back. And there's a lot of competition for very few cap dollars in terms of how they get it done. What would you like to see them do?
I think this is the most likely path too. I think they re-signed Ronnie Stanley. It just doesn't seem like, I think he probably gets around $20 million a year if I had to pick a number right now. I think they figure out the cap space with option bonuses, void years, and, you know, the other things that they like to do. And I think that Voorhees comes in as the favorite for the left guard spot. I think Filili comes in as the favorite for the right guard spot, but they bring in competition for both. And this is where I think McCary gets priced out of Baltimore. It's just a sixth man super sub who isn't a surefire starter, just becomes the kind of luxury you can't afford when your quarterback's other key players are on the big cap hits that they are.
He's definitely a player the Ravens are likely to give a floor value to as he walks out the building. Say, hey, look, whatever you do, we'll give you 4 years, $18 million or whatever it is, if you want to stay here. And then some team at least has to beat that and give the Ravens a, you know, the potential of a compensatory pick out of the loss at the very least. And I think, you know, a guy who can play tackle has a lot of value somewhere.
Yeah. And I think that that's, you know, McCarry is also beloved around the building, the work ethic, all of those things. But at the end of the day, it's going to be the cap dollars that matter the most. Next to him, a guy who could also be looking at a new contract this offseason, Tyler Linderbaum, felt like a bit of an underwhelming game for him. There are times when I feel like he can really be a weapon as a center, but he's got to make sure he's taking care of all of the little things first, from, you know, whether it's hitting his double teams right or snapping the ball. How did you rate his performance this game?
Yeah, not so great. He made 49 out of 56 blocks, but there are a lot of little things, as you mentioned. So the bad snap, I charged as half a sack to him. It was definitely well outside. You know, so it's a wild pitch on the official scorer's card if the ball gets by him. But Lamar did happen to get a hand on it, tipped it up, happened to collect it. And then Lamar might have had a chance to either get rid of the ball, probably was going to take a sack no matter what on that play. And as it played out, I think he deserves half it. He might deserve more, but that's how I scored it out. Four missed blocks in the game, one penetration, one pressure allowed. One thing that was really bad on that penetration, he basically blew up the play by tripping up Lamar for a loss. Now, that could have been called a sack as well. It wasn't, although the Bills, it's funny, the Bills stadium scoreboard operators were calling it a sack right at the beginning. I don't know if it showed up that way in the game book as it was live. And my immediate reaction is, that's not a sack, you know. And of course, that's the way they had it. I gave him half of the delay of game penalty. Now, when that was happening, if you notice what was happening is he's directing offensive linemen into some different blocking formation, does not have that luxury at that point on the clock. Lamar is asking for the ball. Lamar might have gotten him to the line too late. The call might have been a factor. I think I'm actually, in both of these half charges, I think I'm being pretty lenient in terms of Linderbaum in this game. He fits in at the bottom of the D range for the game at center with a 0.74 adjusted score. So I think, honestly, the scoring was fairly generous for Linderbaum in this game.
Yeah, and I think this is probably just the bias of when I'm on this episode, but I think he had a tough game. He had a tough graded game last time I was on the episode. It's the kind of thing where he can be great, but he's got to be consistent first. And I think that there's still a level to which he's building up to being that down to down every single play consistent kind of center. And then you could talk about how brilliant he can be and how the ways that the Ravens can use him as a weapon. But first, he has to absolutely take care of little things like snapping the ball. And that's something that, man, the snaps is just something that kind of drives me a little bit crazy, given the history of snapping issues with the Ravens centers with Jackson. It's the kind of thing that is just, like we talked about holding on to the football, it's so fundamental to the offensive operation. I mean, that's another example of physically holding on to the football that just didn't come through. And I did forget to note that time where he just got pushed back, and that's another time when you just can't let that happen, getting pushed right back into your quarterback. I mean, that situation could end up being so much worse with a Jackson injury.
Yeah, this is, by the way, if you go back years, the Ravens did it all the time. They had Mike Flynn and Trey Vincent and somebody else playing left guard that I'm forgetting. They would step on bowlers' feet all the time in that 2005 season. It was a Keystone Cops kind of year where that happens, you know, literally 10 times as often as it's happened for the Ravens this year. Joe D, very big and very good with footwork. And this was more a case, I think, of big man, small man, and very slippery field, which the Bills were using very effectively on the offensive line, and they, in this case, used it very effectively on defense.
Yeah, and we talked about earlier in the prime matchup this week with Ed Oliver, and he just didn't fully deliver on what he can do. To his right side, Daniel Falele, maybe one of the most talked about players on the Ravens this year, holding down that right guard spot all this year, and I felt like Sunday's game was an example of his growth. His willingness to kind of use the physicality that's inherently built into his body. How did you rate this game for Falele?
Yeah, great game. And Falele finishes the season on an incredible high note. And I'm just going to read his grades off between week 7 and week 15. F, D, C, D, D, C minus D, D. Then that same guy, all of a sudden, beginning in week 16, so the games really matter with that Pittsburgh game, Houston, Cleveland, then the two playoff games. B-A-B-minus-A-A-minus. Unbelievable turnaround in terms of what he did. But this game, he missed 8 blocks out of 56, and he still is lumbering, gets into level 2, can't find anybody, or he isn't decisive enough sometimes, which is a little frustrating. But he's been very good about using his arms the last few weeks, pushing people down, had 5 pancakes in this game, which was remarkable. He made both his pulls, as opposed to McCary making 5 points on 9 pulls. So kind of a unexpected difference there. McCary's been more effective over the course of the season. Just a great finish to the year by Fa'alele. And he's one of the players I'm actually excited about. I think you got to think about re-signing him to an extension right now. And this is the strange. A lot of people are going to say, what the hell are you talking about? But I think he's a guy, he and Ardarius Washington, both guys you could have a little bit cheap that you could get real value on.
Yeah, it would be a savvy move by this Ravens front offense. It would be somewhat of a pat on the back for them too, after, you know, really sticking with Fa'alele throughout training camp in the early parts of the season and even the stretch throughout the year where he was just consistently struggling. To have him end on such a high note is certainly it's a nice thing to see on a personal level for a guy who, you know, was so maligned early in the year. I don't think we talk enough about confidence and the role that plays, but it's clear that he really had his confidence in himself by the end of the season. Another guy next to him, and you talk about re-signing, this would be your right guard and right tackle for the future next to Roger Rosengarten. That would be your combo, would be Fa'alele and Rosengarten if you were to re-sign Fa'alele right now. And Rosengarten was just named to the all-rookie team along with Joe Alt. I thought he improved steadily throughout the year and still, like we talked about, needs a lot of help. Not a lot of help, but a good amount of help in the pass rush with chips. It's something he's still working on, being able to handle that right side on his own.
What's been really good about Rosengarten this entire season is he hasn't had a single fall off the table game. And a fall off the table game, I would often put, is like more than 10 points below passing. He didn't even have a single F this year. And that's just normal variation at playing offensive tackle, that you'll have a game sometime where you run up against a really good pass rusher, you get beat. A lot of this is the Ravens not allowing it to happen because they put so much of their eligible receiver blocking focus on that side. But he had another reasonably good game in this one. He missed 9 blocks, allowed half a penetration. That was fairly early in the game. 1.5 pressures. That ain't bad in total. 0.71. He did get run out of a pressure by Lamar. That was also, he shared that one with Linderbaum, actually. And so I minimized his adjustment, but still at 0.74, he's right in the middle of the C range. And another, you know, game you could be very happy about who this guy is as a rookie. And I, you know, coming out of this year, basically he had about a B minus season, I'd say, for the whole year. I can't even impress upon people how great that is for a rookie. I mean, that's higher than where Linderbaum was as a rookie, and everybody was sure he was going to be great. He really hadn't come through as a pass blocker yet, but this is a game. I mean, I think Rosengarten, I'm not 100% sure he's going to be able to move to the left side and move to be effective, but I am pretty sure he's going to be an effective right tackle at a minimum for his career.
Yeah, and he was the 62nd overall pick. He was the 10th offensive tackle drafted, and he had one of the best seasons of any rookie offensive lineman this year. I think the Ravens the Ravens patience in this draft, both with Wiggins, but especially with Rosengarten, paid off. He was drafted one pick before Kingsley Suamataia of the Chiefs, who had a horrible, horrible rookie year. I mean, benched multiple times. I cannot believe that the Chiefs are playing the AFC Championship game, especially with him and I think his Wanya Morris, their other young offensive tackle playing as well as they have. It is really hard to find quality offensive tackles, period, in the draft. We've seen so many that have been drafted high in the first round not do as well. And to have a second-rounder pan out like this is phenomenal.
Yeah, and even when they end up being good players, they often are like Joe Staley or who's the guy, the Colton Miller, the guy for the Raiders, where they suck in their first year, and then they turn it around and are fine. The growth trajectory for Rosengarten being pretty good in his first year is just unbelievably high. And, you know, I was saying the same thing about Linderbaum too, is that the C plus is a great place to start. And people are saying, you're crazy, he's already a Pro Bowler or what? Well, he became that in his second year. He became a good pass blocker. This year, actually taking a step back as a pass blocker, he needs to consolidate some of those gains he had in 2023. But, you know, the growth trajectory from a point a starting point this high, I think is just very exciting for Rosengarten.
Even more so when you consider the kind of offense that he played in Washington and how different that was from what he had to adjust to in Baltimore. Physical style, schematically very different. Absolute huge props to him. I think Josh Jones and I think Ben Cleveland both featured as sixth offensive lineman in this game. I believe coming in, it had been primarily Josh Jones. Ben Cleveland had a couple cameos throughout the year, but this game, both saw a couple snaps.
Yeah, so 3 out of 3 for Josh Jones, 1 level 2 and 1 pancake. So he had a nice game. Cleveland made 1 out of 2 blocks in what I presume is going to be his last game as a Raven. Kind of always will be the great mystery is why Cleveland never earned the right to fail at a guard position at some point. And it could have been starting him over Voorhees this year, starting him ahead of McCary maybe at some point early in the year. It could have been starting him at right guard instead of Fa'alele. But I got the impression, particularly from the way that Joe D went after Fa'alele at camp, that he was the player who he was really bought into and really loved, and that was the guy that he was just going to make an NFL guard no matter what. And then they stuck with that, you know, after Joe was gone, which is a great credit to Joe and to Warhop that they got him playing well by the end of the year.
Yeah, and I think you said it about Cleveland as it being a mystery because it never made sense. It was something we talked about a lot at camp. Why is he not getting reps at guard? Every time he's played guard in the NFL, he has looked at a minimum serviceable. And there are times where he has come in as the backup and played better than whoever he was replacing, capably replaced Kevin Zeitler on a couple of occasions. We'll always be some of a mystery, and I don't think we're ever going to get an answer. As far as Jones, a solid 1 year for him in Baltimore, could be the kind of guy who signs, who they re-sign this offseason, looking for him in a similar swing tackle, sixth offensive lineman role. I think the idea that you could get more playing time here as a sixth offensive lineman, as opposed to being a swing tackle sack and having to wait for an injury somewhere else might be appealing, because I also don't think he showed enough to earn a shot at a starting job with another team.
I would agree with you on the starting job. I just think the backup left tackle market is so out of whack that any player who's a surplus player to your team traded at the end of camp is a seventh round conditional pick. Okay, that's the price. But a backup left tackle who is your fourth guy or your fifth guy and you're planning to cut, shop him around, you get a sixth round pick, probably no questions asked, for us, or a 6 for a 7 kind of trade, which is really a much more substantial value. So I think there'll be a suitor for Jones. Actually, I think the Ravens are going to have to pay a couple dollars to keep him if they want to, but I'd be in favor of it because they need to keep another tackle. So if they're going to sign Ronnie, even I would sign one of McCary or Jones as well.
Yeah. I think if you're really looking at going with a rookie, drafting another rookie tackle, I think you absolutely have to keep McCary, and moving on from Stanley entirely, you have to keep Jones or McCary in the building because, like we just talked about, there's no guarantee that rookie's going to be able to come in and do great. Jones certainly doesn't profile as a long-term left tackle. He's been okay throughout his career. But that market, someone could look at what he did and say, hey, here's a sixth offensive lineman, and we have two tackles we're not in love with, so let's bring in another guy who at a minimum is going to be our sixth offensive lineman, and a team that has more, just a cheaper quarterback at the end of the day, it's going to be able to make a bigger offer.
Yeah. All right. How about we talk some skill position players? Who would you like to talk about?
Yeah, sounds good. I think sometimes I feel like we start with some of the big names. I'd really like to start by talking about Tylan Wallace. This was another game, like I said, where he made the most of his one opportunity. But I think you really hit on it earlier, talking about his run blocking. He has a mentality where even those plays are opportunities for him, because those are the times when he gets on the field. That's the role that he's been assigned to. And he sees that as his opportunity to continue to prove himself as a worthy member of this offense. He's a guy that I think a cheap extension for this offseason, a cheap multi-year extension, would just make too much sense, especially if you see him becoming truly the third wide receiver in this offense. Now, you don't need to have a prime third wide receiver for this offense with the tight end depth, but that's where Wallace, being a guy who can contribute on special teams, who can contribute in the run game, and catches almost everything that's thrown his way, is actually just a really, really good player to have on your offense. So very, very, very impressed with his development. I think when he was drafted, there was hopes of him becoming a little bit more explosive of a player, but the opportunity is just never really there because of the depth chart and the tight ends.
Reminds me of Chris Moore a little bit in terms of having a lot of special teams value. Wallace, maybe even a little less special teams value because Moore was exceptional in terms of his nose for the football and all those things and being a gunner. But Wallace has been as good as Moore ever was at the top of his game. And Moore had a year where he caught 84% of the passes. Wallace this year had 16.1 yards per target. That's an absurd number. I mean, that's like Jamar Chase running over the SEC kind of number. It's just so good. So I'm thrilled about it. I think there may be another team that looks at that and really says it's worth it to us. And I think the Ravens have a chance, at least with the frictions involved, to sign him for about $2.6 million, which will count as a vet min salary against the cap. All right, I'll talk about Bateman a little bit. I thought he has had a marvelous set of games with the absence of Flowers. He's done basically what could be hoped. He caught 4 to 5 balls in this game. The one ball, of course, he didn't catch was the overthrow from Lamar that was misread, mis-eyed, mis-looked off the safety, whatever Lamar wants to call it, but his mistake. And I think that's the only ball he didn't catch. And the rest of the time, he's in the right place, presenting him to Lamar, catching the football when it's thrown to him, including the big touchdown and the ball that got him down to the 2-yard line. And they also, we haven't heard diva crapola from him since he's been here. And he's a guy who does seem to have, you know, some number one receiving talents. I hope we don't hear about him asking for a trade this offseason, because I don't think the Ravens should grant it. I think they've already been more than fair in terms of his personal situation this last year. They gave him extra money. Bateman would look at his less money than he was really entitled to, probably, but it was just a fantastic contract for the Ravens. He's got one of the most valuable second contracts for any wide receiver in the National Football League right now, with 2 years remaining on it. And he honestly probably could be traded for a number one pick at this point. The question is how far up in the first round, but I would think at least around number 20 to 22 right now, you could trade him for, given there's 2 years left on this contract for very little money.
Yeah, I think that would obviously take him, you know, demanding a way out. But I think, look, he saw 74 targets this year. That is a healthy, healthy number in this offense. I think you can go somewhere else. And this is kind of the classic debate for so many players. You can go somewhere else, maybe earn more money, get, you know, bigger numbers, but are you going to be in a better position? And I think this is the year where the Ravens kind of did their part in showing Rashad Bateman that they can put him in the best position as well. You know, using him as a really key player in the red zone and really harnessing his downfield separation abilities. I feel like that's something that they were a little bit more intentional about this year. I feel like in past seasons, there were a lot of times where he was running a lot of cardio and just not getting the ball thrown his way. He's had that, and I think it speaks volumes about the importance of a fully healthy offseason where you're completely locked in, you're not missing practice time with your players. His chemistry with Lamar on the scramble drills improved. I've always been a big fan of his, huge fan of his, and I do think I always saw him as a guy who was like, man, in an offense that really just wanted to throw the ball all the time, he could put up some real numbers. And that's got to be a thought on his mind, too, with his current contract, but agreed with you.
One more thing about Bateman here is that the Lamar Jackson, there are two things about playing with Lamar Jackson that will never be ideal for most receivers, but is specifically a receiver like Bateman. Bateman's primary quality, he has speed. He has good separation ability. A lot of that separation ability is because he's a great route runner. He can stack a cornerback certifiably and make them feel very uncomfortable in a lane change necessary to make up speed or to make up ground. And he has a really legitimate ability to make a cornerback make the wrong move at the top of the stem, which is a very underrated part of his game. And it's why separation metrics, depending on how measured, can often show up very, very well for Bateman. The problem is that Jackson does not really throw anticipatory throws where people break out of the route. That's a Flacco thing. Back shoulder throws, you know, it's really not a Jackson thing. And the Ravens have gotten so much out of Jackson because He can extend, and then run or throw just about anywhere on the field. And
yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's one thing about the Ravens is you don't really have a number one receiver because of that. Not ever with Lamar. Flowers gets a lot of targets. Andrews got a lot of targets at one time. It was unhealthy. You basically don't want anybody funneled targets to, because Lamar Jackson is the centerpiece of the offense, and anything that directs where he ought to throw the ball rather than where he thinks is best is probably the wrong call. And then, of course, the Ravens are going to run a lot more than most other teams given their potential leads in games.
Yep. And I think for that reason, I don't see Bateman signing another contract in Baltimore. But that's why, you know, his current deal is such a good value. Another guy I'd like to talk about is Patrick Ricard. Again, another personal favorite of mine, a guy who just shows up and crunches tackles, crunches ends, does whatever he has to do. Another free agent. And this is another interesting decision the Ravens will have to make, another situation like the one I just described, which is, you know, how many, but he's in a different spot than Bateman, because Bateman, I think any team in the NFL could use Bateman. I don't think that's the case for Patrick Ricard. I don't think any team in the NFL figures out how to use him. And as a result, he has a smaller pool of teams that would even be interested in him. And that just drives down the price. The fullback is just, it's just a light market. And I think that that's going to be an area in which the Ravens are going to try and extend him again, because I can't imagine him having much desire to leave here either. This is the offense in which he probably sees the most snaps, most opportunity in the NFL. Heck, he caught a touchdown this year. And so that just seems to be, has always been a very, very good match between him and this team. I can't see him going anywhere.
Yeah, somebody saw that Patrick Ricard was 350-1 to score a touchdown in this last game against Buffalo. And you people would think, oh, I want to get $5 on that or something. And I might have the number slightly wrong, but I think it was like, it might have been 35-1. I might have been wrong, but either way, it was a big number, and you could see a path in terms of circumstances to where he might actually score. He's typically scored in games where the Ravens have had huge leads. So he scored twice against Miami and at the back end of 50-point games, you know, the 56 and the 59 game that they put up against Miami. But, you know, there's eight teams that want him. In a certain sense, he's a victim of his own versatility. So the fact that the Ravens were able to craft Patrick Ricard into the player he was today, I'm not saying Patrick Ricard didn't work very hard to get there himself, not saying that at all, but the fact that the Ravens were able to see it and craft it from a UDFA means the Ravens might have the moxie to think they could do it again. And so, we've already seen the Chargers did it already with a defensive lineman they turned into a fullback. I think the Ravens probably at some point will have to move on from Patrick Ricard and find the next one. I bet they'll use a very similar formula to figure it out.
Yeah. And he's getting up there. I think he's almost 30. One other note on those touchdowns, I think that's also a team thing where they look at a guy who does all the dirty work and, well, yep, we're up by 1,000 points, let's get this guy a touchdown. And that's, you know, I'm not saying this is Eric DaCosta calling Todd Monken saying, hey, we need to keep Pat happy and get him in the end zone. I think it's just the more of the mentality of their team and their offense and saying, look, we know you're doing all the dirty work, so we're going to get you a touchdown when we can. And that, you know, that can mean something to a guy like Ricard.
Yeah. All right. Let's see, how are we doing on time here? I know we got some good mailbag questions. Maybe we talk about Justice Hill for just a second, because, you know, a guy who had another fine game, coming off of a, you know, his a really productive season last year, but also another productive season this year in terms of most metrics that you would look at. The fact that they didn't have to really go to a third back at any time this year, when last year even they used a lot of Keaton Mitchell, despite having, you know, good complementary backs with Edwards and Hill that could work together. This year it's Henry and Hill, and they take every single snap, basically. RB3 snaps the whole season are probably 25 or less in total. It just speaks volumes to the value they're getting out of Hill. And they obviously they've re-signed him already. I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, a guy who's just worked really, really hard to be, you know, whatever the team has asked of him. I think normally, you know, a guy like Derrick Henry comes and joins your team and you're thinking, oh, well, there go all the snaps. But the Ravens were very clearly never in that boat. And I think they saw it as a way to keep Henry, to give Henry snaps off and throughout the season and throughout games. But also making the most of Hill's skill set. I mean, he's always been a solid pass protector. I really think he's made great, great strides as a pass catching back out of the backfield. The last player I wanted to mention is Mark Andrews, who has been just ridiculously maligned. I think some of the things people have been saying about him have just been way, way out of bounds. And I feel it's important to say that and talk about Mark Andrews. You know, yeah, this was a tough game. He had some nice plays. He had some nice plays throughout the game, but this is a really tough game to see a player like that. Not just the 2-point conversion, but the fumble as well. I believe he had one other drop, if I remember correctly. So just a really tough game from a player who started slow and then just kind of slowly heated up throughout the season. Didn't get in the end zone this game like he has in so many other games recently. You know, it's possible that was his last snap as a Raven too. The Ravens have a tough contract decision with him coming up. So I just want to say, I think it's important to say, like, Andrews has done a lot for this franchise. He is the franchise leader in touchdowns. I don't think there's probably no one that is taking Sunday's loss harder than him, because he knows exactly, you know, he had the ball in his hands and he let it slip away on more than one occasion. And I'm not trying to minimize that. But what I am trying to say is that, you know, he is still a Raven and all, you know, one of the best Ravens of recent memory, and above all else, a person who makes mistakes. And I just think it's important to say that.
Yeah, that, you know, that's a really great point. And Mark will step right into the Ring of Honor as 5 years after he retires from wherever that is. I think there's still a chance that he'll be with the Ravens in 2025 because he has so much value relative to the cap savings they have. So they may decide, hey, we might try and trade him, and we'll see if someone wants him and will give us value. But if they won't, then we're just going to keep him. The problem is the Ravens are just in such a tough spot in terms of all the younger players they have to re-sign, and in particular the tight end spot, having three guys stacked up with their contracts all ending at the same time. And it's it's been the deepest three-man unit now for 2 years. They've had a great success throwing the ball to those guys for both of those years in terms of any metric you'd want to care. But it's the passer rating throwing to them last year was over 140. I haven't checked this year to see what it's like. I know one of the interceptions was a ball thrown to Andrews, but Mark Andrews has been such a part of this franchise and always been a great Raven, been a leader. It's so positive. I hope we're not just discussing his eulogy here and that there isn't more to the Mark Andrews story. It's a tough freaking business, and this might be the end of the line, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think extension is a sneaky extension candidate going into the last year of his deal. I do think he would have to be willing to take a pay cut off of the APY that he signed for originally, or at least not a inflation on his pay rate, even commensurate with the cap. I just think he'd have to take what would be considered ultimately a pay cut on an extension to say in Baltimore, which, you know, who knows, that connection with Lamar Jackson. He really does, you know, it's always hard to quantify how much guys love being in a specific franchise. But he clearly has that connection with Lamar Jackson. Every single player on the team was immediate to back him up when asked about it after the game. So I don't think it's the situation where he feels like he's let his team down and needs to go find a new home. I don't think anyone's going to look at it that way. I think it comes down to dollars and cents, like a lot of things do.
Right. And sadly, Cundiff and Evans hadn't done enough for the Ravens when they had their Cundiff Evans moment that it came down. And in fact, Evans, the passer rating throwing to him that year was zero. Okay. And someplace has it as four. They've got his targets a little different. So don't quote me on that, but it's effectively zero. Cundiff had obviously had his ups and downs. He'd been a big touchback king, had been an okay kicker, and then he missed a huge kick, and then that was the lights out. Andrews, the situation is a lot different in terms of, you know, the total amount of currency he has in the bank and love from this town. So I would have been remiss not to talk about him here. So I really appreciate you bringing him up, Nick.
Yeah, and I think I know you're not saying this, but I again just think it's important to say, even Cundiff or Evans, if it was a rookie tight end who dropped those play passes for the Ravens this year, absolutely no one deserves the kind of hate and vitriol that he has gotten, especially from people who are supposed to be his fans, who are supposed to support him, that he has gotten over the last few days. It's something that really, really upset me, quite frankly, in the last couple of days. It's just that how quickly fans are to turn on a guy who is one of those consummate Ravens of the last 5 years, you know, versus Bills fans, in contrast, started donating to his charity, which I'm sure some did it a little bit tongue in cheek, but there are a lot of Bills fans out there who are very sincere in terms of, man, Mark Andrews doesn't deserve to be treated that way by his own fans.
It's definitely, I don't want to go into the machinations behind why donating for charity is a way that, you know, they're doing something. And it's great that they're doing it, by the way. Fantastic. We spent 100%. This weekend with Bills fans and really enjoyed it. What I don't like, and does anything to do with Bills fans, we were at the stadium and we got to see the City of Losers thing be played on the board consistently. And that was very frustrating to me. I don't want any part of that. I don't want to be associated with that kind of crap talk. And I frankly think that John Harbaugh probably could have rebuked the question differently than he did. Now, I'm not really blaming Harbaugh. The source of the question is the bigger problem, but with all of the times I've stood next to him and heard him ask a question about injuries and felt the vitriol come off Harbaugh about that injury question, you know, the impertinence of it and whatnot, it really was tough that he didn't rebuke that question in the same way and say, look, that's ridiculous. It's not a City of Losers. This is one of the best teams, or, you know, what do they ever do to spit in your coffee kind of thing? To ask, you know, Jerry the question directly about that. That was very frustrating. And you just don't want to give the other team scoreboard material for a four game like that.
100%. And I think that, I certainly think, as expected, you know, the Bills blew it out of proportion, but that's what you're supposed to do. That's what you're going to do. That's sure. How you get your guys fired up.
Sure. Absolutely. All right. So let's go to some mailbag questions. We've got some really good ones out here. Appreciate you always for sending these in. Rasmus, the formerly thought to be burner account, actually has had a number of discussions with him. He's not that. Appreciate this. Disregarding the outcome, if possible, do you see any fundamental difference in certain players' operation/procedure in the playoffs? So, for example, are Lamar's reads off or more erratic? Are the routes run or something else? Almost a psychomotoric assessment I'm looking for here. It's interesting. I didn't know that word before. I'm going to have to see if that can ever be fit into a sentence again. I doubt it. but it's very good. Rasmus, great question. I've seen other places the topic brought up of, is it time to hire a sports psychologist? What do you think about that?
I think almost everybody should see a psychologist. I think it's not to get too deep into those. Don't want to get too deep in those weeds, but it's certainly the thing that you would want to have on a football team. It's a tough season. It is a tough season. It is a tough sport physically and mentally. I think he was asking if the routes run are more stiff. I don't know if I'm necessarily seeing anything that makes me look at this Ravens team in the playoffs as that much different than the regular season. You know, there are key examples though of them. You know, I think the Henry run and the Henry drop and the Mark Andrews fumble are two examples of, you know, maybe trying to do too much or trying to get downfield without having the ball all the way secured. I would say if anything, that's the consistent theme that shows up, which is maybe trying to do too much. Trying to do too much, trying to make the play instead of just make a play on a smaller scale. You know, a zero is still better than a negative. But I don't know if I see anything so different from this team where I'm like, oh yeah, that's the play. You know, they're so different from the regular season. I'm not sure I see that.
Yeah, and I'm with you on that. I don't really see a lot of difference. I see difference in results, but I don't know that I really see differences otherwise. I guess pointing to the ball that Bateman threw, that was thrown on the Bateman interception, would be the one that's not a ball that Lamar has typically thrown this year. But let's take the sports psychiatrist thing, psychiatrist, psychologist, whichever it would be. I think this would be an excellent opportunity for Harbaugh, perhaps, to put his stamp on the organization yet another way. And I think one of the important things about it is that Harbaugh took the process seriously personally himself. Is that if you're going to send Ben Cleveland and who would be another good one? You know, maybe Marquise Brown when he was unhappy in the past, or Deontay Johnson would be the perfect example this year. Marcus Williams, maybe, in terms of, you know, blowing up with Orr and some of the things that have happened. I think Eddie Jackson's actually the one who blew up with Orr. Let me be clear about that. But sending those players to a sports psychiatrist or having them do a little bit of session time to try and unpeel the onion and whatnot provides you essentially with a mediator on the fact that Harbaugh has this kennel that has a lot of players that he's has a hard time getting over the hump with. Well, you know, you bring in a psychiatrist or a psychologist, and they're going to talk to both parties and try and understand it. I think here's where the disconnect is, kind of thing. It's an opportunity to really resolve some of those kennel issues, maybe productively, if both parties take the process seriously. But I think it would be incumbent upon Harbaugh to be part of it.
Yeah, I think the idea is that you have that in place in the first place. You know, where a player, even earlier before, you know, players don't just blow up and argue with their coaches out of absolutely nowhere. That's typically pretty rare. Usually, it's building for a time. Clearly, it was building it for a time with Eddie Jackson, and so the benefit of having someone on staff ready to go is actually you're starting to solve that problem. You're starting to work on that earlier. You can figure out it's a problem earlier if they're able to, you know, express those issues with someone. I believe the team does have a team clinician, a behavioral health clinician. I think they previously had a sports psychiatrist. I'm not sure if they have someone who's designated specifically as a sports psychiatrist now. But I think what you said about Harbaugh taking the initiative, making his stamp, I actually think it's a matter of like Harbaugh being willing to go as well himself. This is nothing, I'm not saying anything about John Harbaugh's mental health or nothing ridiculous like that, but he deals with all the same stressors that the players do. It's an exceptionally long season, exceptionally long hours for him. And so I think that setting that example is something that he could do.
I'm going to even add to that. I think that Harbaugh could get a gain from it in terms of how he deals with the media. There are times he gets pissed off with the question, and you know what? It's human nature, get pissed off with the question. But John Harbaugh is part of the problem in terms of how he answers questions about injuries. In M&A work, we have a common statement. It's our only comment is no comment. You can't say, I can tell you we're not making any attempt to acquire this company kind of thing. No, you can't say that, because then when you can't say anything about this other company that you are trying to acquire, you're obviously giving away information. So your first question when you're ever asked about an injury, will a player play, whatever, is saying, I cannot comment about injuries. I cannot and will not comment about injuries. My only comment is no comment. All of those are fine, but you can't be one-sided about, yeah, he'll play, and we're going to see, come with the game, it's going to be a game-time decision. You just can't give, you know, mixed sides of that same thing, or people will start to handicap what you're telling them about injuries.
Yeah, I think it was clear coming into the game that Flowers wasn't going to play, no matter how much the Ravens tried to make it look that way in the second half of the week. But you know, I don't want to get too bogged down in the discussion about, you know, sports psychiatrist stuff, because I think that's something that the team already has thought about and is addressing on some level.
All right, let's talk to Adam Minikowski. He says, is it just me or did the Ravens not go big as much as we thought they would? I think the snap count showed 3 for Jones, 2 for Cleveland, but then I don't think we possessed the ball as much as we did against Pittsburgh. I think we already kind of addressed this earlier in the show, Adam, so you probably have heard your answer already, but the Ravens, I think, got the personnel matchups they wanted. They got Taron Johnson out of the game for a lot of snaps, largely by just playing 2 tight end and 3 tight end sets, as opposed to having one of those guys, one of those tight ends, be an offensive lineman, which I think gives you more versatility.
Yeah, Adam, I think you answered your question yourself a little bit too. We didn't possess the ball as much. That takes away your ability to dictate terms. Even when the Ravens were sticking with the run, as you know, I've commended throughout, this episode in the second quarter and in the third quarter, they're still doing it more out of two tight end sets because they still want to have more options to pass and be explosive through the air than they would with a sixth offensive lineman on the field. Just one of, I think, three or four different factors that we've talked about that you know, resulted in them not putting that sixth lineman out there. They got the looks they wanted. At that point, what you're sacrificing by putting a sixth offensive lineman on the field and taking off a pass catcher is not worth it once you're already accomplishing what your objective is.
Yep, exactly. All right, we got Ravenalytics says, I would love to hear you and Nick have the blame pie discussion using statistics like WPA, EPA, et cetera. I've attached some NextGen stuff for reference. Okay, now this is an interesting comment from NextGen. NextGen insight for the Ravens Bills. The Ravens lost a total of 36.7% in net win probability on turnovers in their loss to the Bills. So think about that. They basically, on those three plays, took their chance of winning the game from almost exactly 50% at game time down to about 13 with those three turnovers together, put together. They lost 5.9% win probability on the interception overthrow of Bateman intercepted by Rapp. Okay, small actual win probability loss because it's the beginning of the game. 19.3% on the strip sack for DeMar Hamlin. Remember, that created a short field with the Miller return. And 11.5%, which is surprisingly low to me, win probability on the Mark Andrews fumble later in the game. First of all, just measuring stick-wise, finger to the wind, does this seem to make sense to you in terms of the three win probability reductions and the total win probability reduction for the three turnovers?
Yes, because like you said, the interceptions early in the game, you know, that negative 19.3% coming from the strip sack, like you said, a lot of that is coming also from Von Miller's ability to advance the ball and put the Bills in a position to score right after. You know, the Mark Andrews fumble, I forget exactly where that occurred. I thought it was somewhere around midfield, but they did not advance the ball on that. It is, like I said at the beginning, I believe, of the first episode, it is just so tough when a game that is can be so beautiful, can be so complex, really does come down to something as simple as holding on to the ball. Because as we've talked about throughout the episode, the Ravens really, really did a good job on offense outside of those instances.
All right. I think it completely makes sense to me as well. And it's one of these things that they what they didn't have here is their reduction in win probability from the drop 2-point conversion, which I think would have been probably another 20% or so. I think that's about right, because I'd say 60% chance that they would have, the Buffalo would have scored anywhere, so they had an 80% chance to win, and that basically took it to zero. They had a small residual chance of recovering the onside kick. That sound about right?
Yep, that would be about right. I'd be curious to be what the numbers exactly are, but I think situationally it's just unfortunate when you can pick out a handful of plays like that and really say, not just from the eye test, but from the numbers standpoint, that was the difference in the game. It's just disappointing in a game when they executed in so many other ways.
All right. Lyman's Backpack says, after running the read option with great success against the Steelers, the game plan against the Bills felt much more conventional. Outside of turnovers, the offense worked, but curious your option on the change in strategy. I think you hit on this earlier, Nick. I think really a case of what the other team wants to take away. The Steelers wanted to take away Henry, so they crashed on him from the outside every time. Lamar read it appropriately, ran for a bunch of yards. In this game, the read option was not really available to the Ravens in the same way because they were keying on Lamar more.
Yeah, and I think it's also worth noting on some of those plays that look like read options. Some of them, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, some of them are designed to look like read options, but it really gives all the way. Sure. And are designed for Lamar to give them all the way. So it's hard to always quantify exactly the options, you know, how many times that he really had to keep the ball. But again, consistently, they were holding him on the backside. They were really working to prevent him from getting into open space. Like I mentioned earlier, I think the red zone, the low red zone, was probably the opportunity I would have been a little bit more forceful with trying to get the ball in Lamar's hands on design runs. But other than that, I don't really can't quarrel with the game plan because it was effective. The proof is in the pudding. They moved the ball.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm with you on that. And how about the freaking quality of these questions here? These are just great, great questions. I know people oftentimes will have a lot of gripes, and if you work at a radio station, you get calls you really don't want to take about just people are angry. They want a vet on air. You just got to let them do it. But these are just great questions. I really appreciate it. Mr. Ed, here's another good one. Seemed like Kolar had been subbed in for Andrews on certain run sets during the second half. Any correlation there or perhaps just a standard rotation? I'll start with this. I agree with you. They basically were probably had Kolar in there for more run plays, but he was a big part of the Ravens not giving away exactly what they're doing on a play by having multiple tight ends as opposed to a sixth offensive lineman on the play. Pittsburgh, big difference in game, lots of extra offensive linemen, and they were basically just ran it right down the Steelers' throats with a big lead for a lot of that.
Yeah, and I feel like Kolar did a solid job as a run blocker. I think that's, you know, I think snap management is something I've noticed from Monken and Orr this year in terms of their rotations. Orr's rotations along the defensive line, Monken with his wide receivers and his tight ends, and his running backs, even to keep guys fresh as they're going on these long drives down the field. I think that's something that we don't think about as much. Yes, the defenses stay on the field too, but so are the wide receivers and tight ends who are running routes, getting in blocks. And so I think that, you know, that's really just a natural rotation. Also, Ken, I think it's worth saying that part of the reason that we get such quality questions is because of the community and the environment that you've created with this show. So I think you deserve some credit for that as well.
I do appreciate that. We value our listeners to such a great degree, and I always say it's a high STEM audience, but I don't want that to be an elitist thing where you can't enjoy the show if you're not a STEM person. So what I'd more like to say is we try and make this more of a show where we try and explain things as well as we can. And have a good back and forth. And I really appreciate having guests like you, Nick. And I've tried to keep the quality of guests up as high as I can. As you know, you've been on several times, three times this year, right? Already?
Yep.
Okay. Really appreciate you doing it. And that's, you know, an indication of that. I think that's going to do it for tonight's show. We don't do MVPs when we have a loss like this. And I think it'd be kind of not disingenuous, but not particularly useful or make anybody happy to hear about that. But what, Nick, why don't you tell people about where they can find your work and contact you online if they want to talk football?
Yeah, so my work can be found on Baltimore Beatdown and Russell Street Report. You know, as disappointing as the end of the season was, my wheelhouse is really contracts in the draft, and so that's going to kick up in the next couple of months. And I can also be found talking ball on Twitter at Nick, N-I-K, knows ball. So reach out anytime.
All right, outstanding. Other folks out there, very happy, again, with all the listenership this year. Please hit me up if you'd like to be on a film study short this offseason. One of the big ones coming up is a discussion. I want to make it a panel discussion, but there may have to be a couple of different shows on this to discuss whether or not the Ravens should be moving on from John Harbaugh at this point. And I'm particularly short on people who want to take the fire Harbaugh position. So if you really believe that's true, and also if you're really willing to make a balanced argument that at least says, I understand these three or four things about Harbaugh are very good, but I think these five other things outweigh it, or one other thing maybe outweighs it, then love to hear from you, and I'll include you. And as always, I want to make the show as inclusive as possible. So hit me up with your short ideas. Nick, thanks so much for coming on again. Very high quality show. Really appreciate your contribution.
Ken, it's always an honor. Thank you.
We'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.